let's try to get some chazara done. So first of all, we've started off the topic of Eid Echad B'Shvua. As we mentioned, you could look in the Rishonim on Daf Beis and Midbeis. They try to figure out what does the Gemara mean when it considers the Mekach U'Memchar scenario of Yechloku, the two people who are competing with each other, each claims to have bought something. So asks the Gemara, well, Lachzi Zuzei Miman Nakat, let's see who paid, who was taken, who had money taken from him. And it's not a simple point, because the assumption seems to be that someone can answer that question and have them honest. So the Rishonim discuss whether or not that really works. Is there an amanus to the Baal HaMekach? Is there an amanus to the seller, to the mocher, when the Mekach is no longer biado? What would that amanus mean when it is biado? It's a whole discussion Rishonim. You can take a look at Rashi, Tosus, and the Rif, etc. Tosus also considers the possibility that maybe we're actually talking about the litigants, that maybe a litigant would have an amanus to this degree. Surprising idea. And among the suggestions, our Tosus over here also seems to suggest that the Ne'amanus of the Mocher would be enough to eliminate the Chiyuv Shvua. And the Rush, taking it further, the Rush quotes Rebbeinu Tam, the Tosus is consistent with Rebbeinu Tam, that Eid Echad is able to pater from a Shvua. If somebody has a Chiyuv Shvua, and there is a single witness who can support their position, that could get them off the hook for the Shvua. And the Rush goes on to note that Marami Rutenberg was of this position and brought many riyas to this effect, and that this may indeed be the case. The impression one gets from the Rush is that this is true even for any Shvua d'oraisa, which we'll come back to this point. It's not the obvious context of our Gemara. Our Gemara is talking about a Shvua which is on a lower level. Our Gemara talks about a Shvua which was opposed by Chazal because of a concern that people may grab the talisim of each other and fake a Yachloku. So it's a Shvua d'Rabbanan. So one could have said that even if this is true, Eid Echad Patrus from a Shvua, it's only on a level with Rabbanan like this, a lower level Shvua. And that is indeed the way Rebbeinu Tam says it in the Sefer HaYasher. However, the Rush does not make any such distinction. And the way, for example, the Papula Charifta understands it is that it's true for any Shvua D'Oraisa as well. If you have an Eid Echad supporting you, you would be Pater from the Shvua. So the question is this true? And how does it hold up against various contradictions? So we noted, and in terms of methodology, we also tried to highlight the fact that this is presented as a kasha, it's a question from another source, but at the same time, it's something that goes to the fundamental understanding of what's happening here. So, Pasuk and Parshas Mishpatim, it's Chaf Beis, Yud Beis, so talking about the Shomer, the Pasuk says, Im tarofi taref, yaviu eid, hatrefo yishalem. So you bring testimony, and you don't have to pay, and you're not mechuyev in the Shvua either. So aid, as the Gemara says in Maseches Sota, normally means two aidim. And that's also the way the Gemara in Bava Kamma seems to interpret this din. So does that not fly in the face of the Rush, who says that one aid would be enough to get you out of a Shvua, even a Shvua d'Oraisa, like a Shvua Sashomer? So the Sifrei Chachamim notes this question and says that it seems to be this is against the Rush. It's a very lumdish Sifrei Chachamim. He understands the issue as being Rashi's issue. He doesn't address the point that the Gemara really will push you in this direction, that it means to aid him. But Rashi and Chumash, Rashi on the Pasuk says, Yavi you aid, Yavi aidim, Shinishra for Ba'onis for Pater. So that language, which requires two aidim, so Sifrei Chachamim says, you have to say this is against the Rush, and Taka, that seems to be the case. Rashi is arguing on the Rush here, and he points to the Shulchan Aruch, where you'll see, if you look it up, that it's 2 days in the Shulchan Aruch. So the truth is, the Rush, in the Shita Mekubetzes to Bava Kamma, does raise this question himself, and the Rush understands it to be a question of if there are aidim, that if it's a place where there could be more than one aid, So then, for the purposes of clarification, it's a responsibility to bring two Eidim. But if there's only one aid, so it doesn't mean that that one aid cannot be effective in undoing the shur. So that's the way, whether you find that answer so satisfying or not, that's the way the Rosh himself addresses it. But we also mentioned that there is a more lamdish approach, which is found in the writings of Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who was actually one of those who raised the question himself elsewhere, and a few others. Beis Halevi has this discussion as well, that considers the following question. Let's say somebody has to take a shvur, and he has a chiyuv shvur, and therefore, because of the mechanism of Gilgal shvur, the Gilgal shvur is added on to the existing chiyuv shvur. So that extra shvur comes only because the first shvur is there. So what happens if the person and then finds an aid to get him out of this first shul? So would that remove the Gilgal shul? So the assumption these Achronim make is that it would not, that the Gilgal shul is still there. So now again, this whole kasha brought us to a very fundamental point, that what do you mean, Rush and his cohorts, when you say that an aid echad could get you out of a shul? Does it mean there's no chiv shul at all? Or does it mean that there is a chiyuv shvuah, but the aid satisfies the chiyuv shvuah? Which is what this Gilgal shvuah question is able to test. That if you say it echad patas you from a shvuah in the sense that it removes the chiyuv, so then you don't have a platform for the Gilgal shvuah either. But if you say that the shvuah is an obligation, it's just that the aid can fulfill, can satisfy that standard, like the holding in passports now, so like when they ask you to bring different types of evidence and you could have different categories of what could work in terms of proof of identification, this category, that category, that category, so it could be you have a column that could either be a shvuah or an eid echad, so then perhaps that's what's going on here as well, that there's a chiyuv shvuah but the eid echad takes care of it. So therefore it's extremely relevant. The Pasuk is going to tell you that you should bring Eidim because there's still a difference between two Eidim and one Eid. So the Rosh could be correct while still acknowledging a difference between the two, so the Pasuk doesn't have to challenge us. So that whole question of what is the validity of Eid Echad in general is a question which has ramifications in other areas. We know that in general, when it comes to Yerideya, so we have a validity of an Eid Echad, and that Eid Echad can even be a Karov, can even be a Nogeya Badavar. So the reason we all are able to trust our wives and our mothers in terms of kosher food is because of the principle of Eid Echad, Neman Bisurit. So we don't require two Eidim, we don't require that it be a male Eid, that we have a different type of standard of Eidus, and it's effective in that setting. So does this have a role in the context of Mominus? So it's a good question. So the Shev Shemaisa discusses, do we assume that the only impediment to an Eid Echad is when you have to overturn a Chazaka? That you need two Eidim to overturn a Chazaka? Or is it that Eid Echad really can do very little? So he quotes the Maharik, who says that it's only about overturning a Chazaka. And he accepts the Maharik halfway. Where he says that in the context of a davar shebe'erva, so he thinks that's true, that you don't need to aid him any time you're dealing with something that might be called davar shebe'erva, only when you're trying to overturn a status issue. So if you know that someone is an ashes ish, so then you'll need to aid them to establish that she's no longer an ashes ish. And guna issues has its own kula in terms of why an edachad works, but strictly speaking, you'll need to aid them in order to overturn a chazakah. But if there isn't a chazakah up against you, it's not necessarily the case that you'll need to aid them. But the ksos, the shmaisa, doesn't accept this all the way. He doesn't accept it for mamanus. And he has two proofs that it shouldn't work for mamanus, and that it's not just a question of overturning chazakahs. One is he quotes the Rush, which is very difficult because he quotes the Rush as saying the opposite of what we see the Rush to say. Says one of his points is that the Rush says an Eid Echad doesn't patur from a shvuah. How do we understand that? I don't know. I'm not even sure why the later Svarim don't raise the objection, as far as I'm aware, but it seems to be the opposite of what we just saw the Rashi to say, so that's one of his proofs. His other proof is the Gemara, which brings us into our second parak discussions, and which will beautifully segue and synergize into the second parak, is the Gemara on Daf Chav Ches, where you have a clash between two people, Simanim v'Simanim. Each one has Simanim, but one of them has Simanim v'Erechad, so still, what's the ruling? Yaniach. So it's a deadlock. And the fact that one of them has the Erechad on top of what the other guy has too, so you should think that should tilt the equation. Apparently not. Sounds like it's garnished. Sounds like it doesn't do anything. That's the Shmeis's observation. Now, there are other ways to look at that, and that's what will segue us into our Tzurba Mirabanan Sugya. So we'll first mention, and it's a good opportunity to reflect on the broader point that he makes, the Shari Yosher talks about this, or Shimon Shkap, where he discusses the fact that Hashavas Aveda is an interesting area of halacha in general. That strictly speaking, if somebody asks you to return property to him, and he just says it's his, so l'chora alpi mamanis, he should win. The guy who claims property with no proof should win. Because the person who found the property is a shema. He doesn't know that the claimant is wrong. He doesn't think that it's his. He doesn't think it's the finder's. So for all he knows, the guy's claiming it is right. He doesn't have any reason to doubt it. So he's a shema, and the guy who's claiming it is saying it's definitely his. He's a bar. So bari v'shema, it's a little bit of a question when it works and when it doesn't work. So we've assumed so far it doesn't work against the chazaka. But here there isn't a chazaka. The guy is a shema, and he doesn't have a chazaka. He's a toface. No one thinks this was always his. He just is holding it on behalf of whoever the true owner is. So based on the principles of Mamanus, we should say that the claimant should get it, bari v'shama, bari adif. It's a question that Pnei Yeshua raises in Subis and that others have asked. So says the Shari Yosher, that you see from here that Hashavas Aveda is not a normal Mamanus principle. That it deals with money. We made reference to this a little bit last week when talking about Takfu Kohen, that ribbis is an even more blatant example of this. That you could have an area of halacha which deals with money, but it's not straight mamanus and it's not necessarily guided by mamanus principles. So Hashavas Aveda might be an interesting example of that, that essentially it's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that deals with money, so it's the mitzvah rules that guide it more than the normal mamanus rules. So therefore, what do you have? You're right, that if I just had mamanus rules, I'd say, bari v'shem, I give it to the guy who claims it. But the Torah in Parshas Kiseitzeh gives me a mitzvah as a motzi aveda that I'm mechuyev to watch it. I have a din of a shomer aveda, and I can only return it to somebody who fulfills my requirements of adrosha chicha imach darshehu shlo yehi rama. I have an obligation to investigate him that he shouldn't be a rami. So that din is a din in Yerideya. Essentially, it's in Choshen Mishpat, but it's a din. It's a ritual din. It's a mitzvah, so to speak, as opposed to Ribbis, which is actually in Yerideya. But here I'm just using it as an expression, that it's a Yerideya kind of din, it's a mitzvah, and therefore it doesn't have to follow the rules of Mamanus. That's essentially what happens with this principle. So therefore, the fact that the Erecha doesn't add anything, says we do find there is a Ran in Meseches Chulin, that Daf Tzadi Hey, the Ritva disagrees, but the Ran says that an Erechad essentially would work by an Aveda. That if, let's say, Jonathan claims to have an Aveda, Jonathan claims that I found the phone and Jonathan claims it's his. So then Ephraim comes and backs him up, so according to the Ran, that would be accepted. That we assume that Ephraim has no Negiyah here, so he wouldn't be lying, so Erechad is effective. So how do you reconcile that with the issue of simanim v'simanim yaniach? Because there you have a clash between two people. So the Erechad is not enough to tilt the equation between two people who are both bari. But in a normal Hashavas Aveda situation, it's really, technically speaking, a Bari V'Shema. Just there is a Chiyuv Mitzvah for me to figure out for some money. And therefore, this could also accomplish that. This is enough. The Eyecha could also suffice in order to satisfy that goal. He also adds over there, Reb Shimon and the Shari Yosher, that you might think it's a little funny that if the laws of Mamonis really mean that the claimant should get it, so just because the finder has a personal mitzvah, what right does he have to deprive somebody else of his property because of his personal mitzvah? So you have to take it a little bit further and say that the mitzvah is how this property should be treated. Again, which also has echoes of Takfu Kohen. So again, the synergy here is keeps coming back layer upon layer. It's another reflection of where you have different areas of halacha bumping up against each other, and the question of mumminess together with another area of halacha, what's going to control? So this essentially kind of echoes that point from Takfu Kohen, that the fact is a mitzvah of Hashabbos Aveda will redefine the mumminess rules here, and therefore the Bari V'Shavma is not going to come into play. So with that, we will segue from the first parak sugya of Eid Echad B'Shvua into the second parak sugya of returning an Aveda to a Talmud Chacham without Simanim. So the Gemara says that there are some items that don't have Simanim and that maybe could still be returned, because a Tzur B'Mirabanan, a Talmud Chacham, has the right to have property returned with Tzvi Asayin. He can look at something and he can say, it's mine, and he can get it back. So how does that work? So you could say, based on what we just said, we just gave Rav Shimon's explanation, which would be effective for that. And you could also note that if you say like the Ran, this is a point that the Rav Chanan makes in the Kol Veitz Aris, that the Ran says a third party could testify. But the whole premise is that because he's a third party, so he's not going to have a reason to lie, so the third party, the Eid Echad, is Nemun. But if the whole chap of a Talmud Chacham is that he's believable, that he has credibility, so then he could be the Eid Echad on his own behalf. So normally you would need it to be a third party in order to make sure he has no negiyas. But if the Gemara is establishing that a Talmud Chacham is granted credibility, so then perhaps he could have that role here as well. And you could also say, as the Pri Yitzchak says in his Tshuvos, that's a similar point, that the whole mechanism of Hashavas Aveda means that we're not really responsible to figure out who owns it. That's not what the process is. The purpose of Bedika Simanim is not, Drisha Simanim, let's say, is not so that you can figure out conclusively whose it is. It's so that you can ascertain the guy is not a liar. That we're not expected to figure out who actually owns it. We do, to a certain extent, credit the claimant with owning it, as long as we can verify that he's not a liar. So if the Talmud Chacham has that status, that he is believed, so then that is considered to be enough, and we can give it back to him based on that. We also mentioned that the Gemara Masechet Shabbos has a different qualification, that he's makbid on his garment, that he doesn't wear the inside outside, and that's the quality that you need in order to return something to a Talmud Chacham b'tzvi asayin. And Shulchan Aruch actually brings both standards. And it seems to be there's two different elements, as we've seen in other areas as well, that first of all, we have to know that the guy knows what he's talking about. Talmud Chacham could be an honest guy, and he could say, oh, I lost a phone. Yeah, that's a phone, right? They're all the same. And if he's not sophisticated enough to know there's a difference between an iPhone and a BlackBerry, so then could be as honest as the day is long, he's still not going to know what he's talking about. So we need to know that he has enough of an awareness of these things in order to trust that his opinion is significant. And we separately need to know that he's honest so that he's telling the truth when he says something. And again, it's an important distinction that we highlight in other areas. We talked about Migo and the like, that and we talked about Hilchos Lashon Hara as well, that credibility involves at least two halves. The person has to be honest, and the person has to be right. And it's entirely possible a person can be honest and not be right, and a person could be right and not be honest, and it's important to make sure that you have both halves of the equation. Hi, Fred, do you have a question?
Yeah, we're just trying to make sure that we don't need to find actual lines, just that the person's not lying.
Right, so then still, it's still, that's an interesting point, and then that this would perhaps add another element to what the Pri Yitzchak was saying. But again, it's still, his basic point still stands, is that we're not mechuyev to actually clarify who owns it in the sense of eliminating all the other possibilities and finding actual proof of ownership. It's still about his claim will be enough. We just need to make sure that his claim is a reliable claim. So reliability has two components to it. One, that he potentially knows what he's talking about, and two, that he's telling the truth about what he is claiming to know about. So those two elements are here. What we were also very interested in, and it's a little bit of a long discussion, is the Gemara goes on to say in that context that a Talmid Chacham, and it should always be so, the definition of a Talmid Chacham in that setting is somebody who is honest, somebody who is not the Mishana B'diburo. And in that context, the Gemara says that there are a number of instances where a Talmid Chacham can legitimately be Mishana B'diburo. He can say something that's at odds with the truth, and this will not affect his reputation. He's still going to be considered honest. So what are the cases the Gemara gives? The Gemara talks about Masechta, which on the surface sounds like it's an issue of modesty, that he wants to play down what he knows in learning, saying he knows less than he actually knows. The second was Achsenoi, that if he's hosted by someone who gave him a great meal, so it may be in the interest of the host that this not get out because he'll be besieged by requests, so he has the right to protect his host by fudging that fact. And the third was puraya, which most likely means bed and talks about the marital intimacy. And if somebody pries into that, so now you're not obligated, it's probably not appropriate to answer the question if it's not anybody's business. I mentioned the Maharsha did interpret it in the context of Purim, Chayvin Shlubu Sumi Puraya. Now that we're just about almost halfway through with the Sar B'Teve, so now Purim becomes Inyan HaDiyoma. So we can connect it to that. But we also considered whether we could extrapolate from that example of Puraya that anytime somebody asks you something that's none of their business, so that's also perhaps a heter to be Mishana, that if somebody is prying into something that's not proper for them to be asking. So, and sometimes they'll ask you a question where there's no way to decline to answer without confirming what they want to know or something along those lines. So one could perhaps make a case here that there is a heter to be Mishana for that reason as well. So essentially the Gemara gives those three examples as to when a Talmid Chacham can be Mishana without losing his reputation. And the question was that there is a Gemara Masechet Yevamos, give a little synergy with last year's Masechta, where the Gemara says that there is a Heter and perhaps a Chiyuv to be Mishana b'fnei HaShamom. And the Gemara there says, this is and also for synergy, this is this week's parsha. So we're not going to, well, we spoke with Vayechi a little bit last week because we won't have a full-blown Chumashah this week. But in Parshas Vayechi, in the end of Parshas Vayechi, it's a few years off anyway, so in the end of Parshas Vayechi, so the Torah tells us that the brothers tell Yosef after Yaakov dies that Yaakov's deathbed instruction was that he should forgive them. And they essentially made this up, and yet the Gemara says it's okay because mutar l'shanos b'fnei hashalom, it's permissible to lie for the sake of peace. And the second opinion the Gemara says it's not just mutar, it's a mitzvah that you're obligated to, and this is derived from the story of Shmuel, who is given the commandment to make David HaMelech, make David the king, and he doesn't want to because he's afraid that Shaul is going to kill him. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, I have a plan, bring an animal and pretend to be bringing a carbon, and that will distract Shmuel and you'll be able to get away with it. So here you have a Shinoi Me'apnei HaShalom that wasn't being justified after the fact, but God's telling him, this is how you should do things. So says the Gemara, apparently it's a mitzvah, and the question could be raised that that wasn't B'nai HaShalom, that was Pikuach Nefesh. He said he's afraid of being killed. So the Sfarim talk about that, and some suggest that the principle of Shluchei Mitzvah in the Zolkin, which is a little bit questionable how far it goes, at least presumably covers this one-time mission directed at this one individual. So regardless of what he was afraid of, his life presumably would have been protected, but the issue of machlokas, that there'd be tension among people, so that is still there, so therefore there had to be a plan in order to address that. And the third example was Afakarash Baruch Latzma Sakein, that the case of Avram Avinu, when he is told by God that Sarah said that he was old, so it comes out a little differently, it sounds like She just said that she was old. So even HaKadosh Baruch Hu apparently is also willing to be Mishana Mifnei HaShalom. So we raise the question of how does that work? We generally assume that honesty is the best policy, Midvar Sheker Tirchak. How could it be that there is a deviation from MS that is allowed or that is commanded? So we saw two basic approaches. One approach is you could say that there is a values clash between two ideals, MS and Shalom. So again, Yana Dioma, so today is Asar B'Teve, so the Pasuk that refers to the Tanesim, in the Pasuk in Zechariah, it says the Tanesim will ultimately be L'Sasim L'Simcha, and the Pasuk ends V'Ha'emes V'Ha'Shalom E'Havu, the truth and peace are beloved. So one can make a case based on that, that there are two equivalent values, truth and peace, Emes and Shalom. And ideally we'll be able to live by them both, but what happens if there's a clash, if there's a conflict between the two? So you could say, well, it's 50-50, these two values are equal, so a responsible adult will pick either one, depending on the circumstances, and therefore that's the opinion of the Gemara, mutter l'shana swifnei hashalom, that it's permissible to be mishana, but it's also permissible not to, because they're equal options. So what if you say that it's not mutter, but it's a mitzvah? So how do you come to that conclusion? So you could say, well, it's a values clash, but they're not 50-50. The shalom is bigger. It's more powerful. Or you could say, no, that it's not even a values clash. That maybe there's no iser sheker in this case. So we mentioned that there is a big question why it is the Torah uses such an unusual language, mitzvah sheker tirchak. Tirchak is not the normal language of Isser. What do we mean by saying stay far away? So we saw that there's a whole range of views, that there are some like the Sefer Achinuch who says that it's mirov tiyuvo. It's so disgusting that the Torah says tirchak rather than just don't. While others see it as a softer language, try to avoid lying, so to speak. And there's also a question of the context, that just like in American law, if I say the sky is green, I can't go to jail for that. But there are cases where a lie can put you in jail. The two most prominent cases would be perjury, lying under oath, and fraud. If you hurt somebody, use the lie in order to deprive someone of their money or the like, so then that would be a criminal type of lying. So too, when it comes to sheker, there is ample basis to say either way, to say that either it's about bezdin, the Gemara Masechet Shavuos kind of sounds like that, or to say that it is specifically a lie that hurts someone. That's the way they say Firayim understands that a lie is an issur ben adam l'chavero, it's usur because it hurts someone, it's not necessarily usur in its own sense. So to say the sky is green would not necessarily be an issur daraisa. It's only an issur daraisa if you tell the guy the sky is green because he has to give you his life savings right now in order to bring the sky back to the way it does, otherwise the whole world's going to be messed up because of you, and then he does, and then it's a fraud. So in order to violate the Isser, it has to be a destructive lie. But if it's not, or especially, as later Sfarim point out, if it's a constructive lie, it helps things, so then it's possibly not Usser from Midvar Sheker Tirchak. Now, there's still a general exhortation of Chosamo Shalchash Baruch Hu Emes, Dover Shkarim, Lo'iko, all the different indications that we're very pro-MS, which we continue to be, but in terms of being an absolute Isser that could be challenging the mitzvah of Shalom, maybe that's not the case. Maybe there is no actual Isser mitzvah Sheker Tirchak, and all there is the Chiyuv of Shalom, which is dominant there.
Doesn't the Sefer Yerim, or another one, say that it only applies to Diana?
The Sefer Yerim says it only applies when it's destructive, when it hurts someone.
We
mentioned before it only applies not to Dayan, but in Bezdin. But the Reim is the one who says that it's only when it's destructive. The Gemara sounds a little bit, the Gemara in Shavuos, other Gemara sound differently, but the Gemara in Shavuos has a bunch of drushes on Midvar Sheker Tirchak that are all in a Bezdin context, which give you the impression that maybe it's a formal Bezdin kind of setting. There are ways in which Dayanim can be the ones doing the sheker. So, for example, the Gemara says that if the Dayan gives more attention to one than the other, so then he's facilitating the sheker. So in that sense, it's Dayanim. But the overall point is that it's in the context of a Bezim. So that's another way of looking at it, that it's not necessarily a values clash, but that in this circumstance, there simply is no Isser. So one of the nafkaminas one could say is the question of is it mutter l'shanos or is it a mitzvah l'shanos? Should we say there's a values clash? So it's mutter because the other option also makes sense, because preserving MS even at the expense of shalom might be an equally valid decision. Or should we say, no, it's not really even an option because shalom is the clear victor, perhaps because there isn't even a values clash, because it's not really an issue of sheker. I think we mentioned that in some of the Chassidish Sfarim, they point out that on the one hand, so the Gemara says, Chaysamo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes, so God's seal is truth, that's a pretty powerful force. But at the same time, the Gemara also says that, and the Gemara in Daf Yud and Shabbos says that you shouldn't say the word shalom in a Beis HaKisa, in an unclean place, because shalom is the Shem Hashem. So truth is the seal and peace is the name. So the name is more representative than the seal is, so therefore the name beats the seal, so shalom beats emes. So that's the whole question, how exactly to evaluate that. There was an article by the editor of the Ohr Mizrach Journal, of Shapensky. It's a whole thorough discussion of what everyone says about those points. What's more important, shalom and emes? They're both mentioned in the Mishnah and Pirkei Avos together. Is there a ranking there? It's a whole discussion. So the question could be then, is it lahalacha, is it mutter, or is it a mitzvah? So that brings us back to our sugya in Bava Metzia, that when the Gemara says that there are these three cases that a Talmid Chacham could be mishane, and it's not going to hurt his reputation, so why is shalom not on the list? No opinion in the Gemara Yavamis says shalom is not a category. Three opinions, all of them say that it's the least mutter to be mishan of Nea Shalom. So why is it not listed in our Gemara in Bava Metzia? So one approach you could take is the approach like Tosis and say that it is there, it is the list. All of these are examples of shalom. They're all cases where, in order to avoid a fight, we let you not say things that may otherwise provoke a fight. And if that's the case, then we have to also re-examine Masechta, which we said before was about modesty, which many do understand it that way, but maybe it's also about Machlokas. We mentioned that story about Reb Chaim Brisker, who had an approach to avoid fighting with people. He didn't want to get into an argument and say, I didn't learn that Masechta, I can't talk to you about it. So he played down his learning in order to stay out of fights, so maybe that's a legitimate goal as well. These are all examples of shalom. They're all subsets. While other Rishonim, such as the Rash and the Rif, say it's not there because shalom is a mitzvah. So I don't need the Gemara to tell me that if you're fulfilling your obligation, that it doesn't make you a dishonest person. It's clear that if you're doing your obligation, so then that's what you have to do. The Gemara is telling us more discretionary areas, that in addition to the chiyuv of shalom, there are things that you could say, if you are inclined to do so, that would not make you into a dishonest person. So then we discussed a few more implications of this question of whether it is a values clash or whether it's a clear mandate for shalom, because really nothing's in its way. So, for example, what about the question of blatantly lying versus simply fudging things? Is it wrong to say up is down, left is right, black is white? Or should you just say things that are a little bit ambiguous? It wouldn't be acceptable in a business context because it would be misleading, but in a harmless context, it's okay. So that would perhaps be totally on this question. And the Rambam seems to take the position that, first of all, it's mutter rather than a mitzvah to say these things, and that the heter is to be mosif vigoreya, to add and take away, which sounds like he's really being very conservative in what he's allowing. He's not allowing actual falsehood, he's allowing modifications of the truth, and omissions and slight expansions, but not real falsification. It's also instructive in that regard that the Gemara doesn't say l'shaker, that the Gemara says l'shanos, which seems to have a milder connotation, not as somebody who's blatantly falsifying things, but somebody who's tweaking reality a little bit. And therefore, maybe that's what the heter is, so it would seem to depend on this. The Chafetz Chaim in his Sefer says that Lamaisa, if you have to, it's mutter alive near Shalom straight out, but theoretically it's ideal to minimize it and to not have overt sheker if it's not necessary. And we discussed in that context as well. So everyone who's gone to a Jewish wedding knows the song Ketzem Raktim Lufne Hakala Kal Nav Chasuda. But they may not know that the Mishnah in Ksubis has another opinion as well. It's the opinion of Beis Shammai, who maintains that, wait a minute, maybe you're not so impressed, so what right do you have to say something that's not true? Invoking, by the way, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, suggesting that according to Beis Shammai, it's not just a Beis Din setting. And Hillel responds, Beis Hillel responds in a fascinating way. There's a lot written about this in Halach and Hashkafa. There's a lot of discussion about the underpinning of these two opinions because they're basically talking past each other. That Beis Shammai says, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, and Beis Hillel's response doesn't really deal with that. Beis Hillel says, come on, what are you going to do? It's essentially the nature of his answer. He says, come on, you're really going to say the truth if that's what you think? Sorry? A song wouldn't work, right? And the wedding would not end the way people wanted to. It would simply not be a pleasant evening for anybody. And Beis Hillel, but it's just interesting because the argument is just a whole, on a whole different plane. They're really talking past each other. But Beis Hillel says that, I'm sure with Manana's day, you'll find people who make the song work too. You know, there's a lot of creativity out there. But Beis Hillel's point is, Halokeach mechach menashok, Yignana Beinav, Shabchana Beinav. If somebody has bought something, it's not returnable. The deal is final. So are you going to tell him it was a bad deal, or will you praise it so he should feel better? Again, it's a fascinating way to make the argument because it's not the real refutation of the point that it's Midvar Sheker Tirchak, but it's coming from a completely different angle. And he goes on to say that Lo Olami Hei Daito Shaladav Ma'urav Mabrio. So a person should always be able to get along with people and should know what to say and what not to say. And that's a little synergy also because it brings us to yesterday's parsha of Abdecha Arav Asanar, that people are interconnected with each other. We talked about that a little bit in the Chumashir. So too, a person should have a personality that allows him to get along with people, and that means you have a little bit of tact. So the question begs itself, so Beis Shammai is firmer than God? Right? There's no opinion in the Gemara that says that it's also Lashanas V'nei HaShalom. It's according to everyone, at least Mutter. And according to the last opinion, the Kadosh Baruch Hu did it also. So what's Beis Shammai's problem? So we mentioned that Beis Shammai lived a long time ago, before there were video cameras. So what's an afkamina? This was an approach that we attributed, without the video camera point, to Yitzchak Sternhill in his Sefer Kofa Yitzchak, that when Beis Shammai was at a wedding, it wasn't the case that people would come up with a video camera and say, so no, what do you think of the kala? If that would happen, so then they would for sure say, kala no, for sure, mutl shayneth b'nei hashalom. But if nobody's asking, so then why should you say something? Why should you volunteer something that nobody was asking about? So apparently, Beis Hillel's opinion, by contrast, is that you can proactively, preemptively say something that's not being provoked, and that you can take measures to spread shalom even without a extreme compulsion to do so. While Beis Shammai apparently feels that this is a values clash and that really you should preserve the emes if possible. And if your back is against the wall, so then you could say something with Nehashalom. But if you don't absolutely have to, so then you should, then it's not necessary. And we discussed how that attitude could be found in a few other cases, the position of the Yad Eliyahu, that one should make a habit of it, you shouldn't do it every day, it's only if it comes up once in a while, it shouldn't be a regular thing. Hi?
Didn't you quote the Sefer Chassidim, which is yeah, very well, aggressive?
Yeah, so we'll, that's how we interpret the verse, and we'll get to it in a second. But we'll mention that in a second. But there's also the machlokas between Rav Kook and an anonymous chacham, Rav Kook and the Chedushim Tiksubis that was published from a collection of his various writings, the Sefer called Tov Roi. So there's a passage there where Rav Kook argues with an anonymous chacham who says that we know the Rambam has this whole idea of the Derech HaMamutza, everyone should take the golden mean, you shouldn't have any extreme in your midos, you shouldn't be on one side or the other, you should be in the middle. But there's also an approach that we should go to an extreme if we're already at another extreme. And that if we have a problem with extremity in one direction, so we might need temporarily to go to the other extreme to bring everything back into balance, to average out in the middle. So says the anonymous chacham, this idea that you could mishan and b'shnei shalom, who's that talking about? That's talking about somebody who's honest most of the time, who's telling the truth most of the time. So once in a while, he finds himself in a situation where he has no choice, and then he can be Mashanet Ne'eshol. But somebody who's got a real issue with honesty, who's got to go to the other extreme in order to fix it, so it's not right for him to be Mishana, even Mipnei HaShalom. And Rav Kook disagreed. Rav Kook said, what right do you have to do your self-improvement program at the expense of the mitzvah of Shalom? Do that on your own time. But if you have a chi of Shalom, it's not right for you to say, I'm not going to do it because I'm working on my Midos HaEmes. So it seems to be, yet again, there's a machlokas here that the Rav Kook sees this as a clear imperative. Let's say what Beis Hillel's view in the example we said before. And the anonymous Chacham sees a values clash here, and therefore he's going to say that sometimes the balance will come out differently if a person is already imbalanced. We mentioned also that there was, in the past tense, a comment to the Chassam Sofer in his commentary to the Gemara Masechta Shabbos. I wasn't able to find it more recently. I saw it once upon a time, but for some reason it's left. But somewhere the Chassam Sofer, I think, says as follows, that when it comes to wearing tefillin, so there is a halacha that a person has to have a guf naki, you have to have a clean body. So the Chassam Sofer says not only physically clean, but it's also spiritually clean. So what's an example of not having a spiritually clean body? A person shouldn't be mishaker with tefillin on. So he shouldn't be mishaker anyway. So apparently, even Pnei HaShalom, you should be mishaker. And if somebody comes and says to you, what do you think of my new tie? So you say, hold on a second, and then you take off your tefillin, and then you answer the question. Or as somebody pointed out, you can be mishaker Pnei HaShalom and say, you're makbid not to talk sicha b'teilu with tefillin on. Halavai. So whatever it is, but the point seems to be that according to that Chassam Sofer, if it does indeed still exist, that there is a heftz of shaker here. It's still offensive to tefillin. It's mutter, but it's still wrong to do with tefillin on. So it's essentially like going to the bathroom. It's mutter, but it's not for tefillin. So too, it's a shaker here. It's a heter shtika shaker. It's mutter, but it's still offensive to tefillin. And that perhaps is taking a certain kind of stand. And as Aaron pointed out, we did mention the unique position of Sefer Chassidim as quoted by the Magen Avraham, which would give it a little bit more weight, but still does not seem to be the practical halacha. Sefer Chassidim says that if somebody comes and asks you for money, so normally the minig is to say to the person, I don't have any money. Sefer Chassidim says you can't do that. You can't be mishaker in such a way. Even though, as many assume, probably with good basis, that it's a Pnei HaShalom. That your alternative is to say to the guy who's asking for money, you know, it's funny you should ask. I have thousands of dollars in my pocket. I just went to the bank and cleaned out my account. I'm just really not interested in giving it to you. I'd probably give it to just about anybody else. So, sorry? Right, so that's probably not really shalom conducive. So people understandably assume that it's better to say, I don't have any money. So it sounds like from the Sefer Chassidim that you can't do that, because he says his own chiddush there, that the whole heter of Pnei HaShalom, that's only for things in the past, but things in the present or in the future, you can't be mishanes. Everyone asked him, there are commentaries in the Moshe Rav Kook edition of the Sefer Chassidim. You can find commentaries from the Chidah and commentaries from the from Reuven Margolius. So the different commentaries in the Sefer Chassidim, they raise the question that where does this come from? And it's again some of the examples that we seem to have, it would appear. So they basically suggest that Chazal had to put some kind of limit on this, that if we put everything on the table, so you could find a way to say any lie you want, and say it's with Dan Shalom, somewhere down the line there'll be a machlokas, so we have to say what I want to now. So therefore we have to limit it, so we say it's only relevant about things in the past or perhaps things in the present as well, but Sefer Chassidim really says only things in the past. So in addition to it being a chiddush, it seems like it doesn't work so well with Kalanav Chasuda, Masechta, and certain examples like that. So what we wanted to suggest is that, as Aaron was pointing out, that maybe the Sefer Chassidim really thinks that there is a values clash here, that there is an Esser Sheker together with it being sometimes mutter for the sake of Shalom. And therefore the question is, under what circumstances can you do it? So if you only have two choices, either lie or start a fight, so then lie. But what if you have three choices? And in the case of the money, so you really have three choices. You could lie and say you don't have any. You could tell them the truth and start a fight. Or you could give them the money. It may not be such an attractive choice, but maybe it's better than compromising either of the other two values. So this perhaps is what the Sefer Chassidim is getting at, that if a person has another way out, so better they should take that way out rather than can compromise on either of these two principles. Remember, if we mentioned the first time around, the Rabbeinu Yonah and the Shai Tshuva, did we talk about that? But, not specifically. Rabbeinu Yonah and Shai Tshuva has a list of 9 different categories of sheker. So sheker has many different forms. Fraud, and harmless sheker, and sheker about stories. There's all kinds of different sheker that he has there. And he essentially asserts that the heter b'fnei ha-shalom would only apply to one of the 9 types, a type that's completely without any benefit to you, without any harm to anyone else. Literally, the sky is green, nothing to do with anything in your life, the other person's life. So that you could be mishaker about. And others may have it a little bit more broadly. So for example, in the Shilas and Shuvah, the Shevet HaKahasi. Anyone bring with the Shevet HaKahasi today? No? Sorry, the bells are dying, correct? So in the Shuvah Shevet HaKahasi, he discusses a case where somebody has a fund for poor Talmidei Chachamim. So he wants to give some to a certain poor Talmid Chacham, but he knows he's not going to accept tzedakah, so he wants to give it to this person and pretend it's a gift from him, from the guy who manages the fund. So is he allowed to do that? Say, I'm a big fan of yours, so I enjoy your svarim, so here's some money. So on the surface, you could say that, and this is the way the Shevet HaKahasi says, is that what are we dealing with here? We're dealing with Gnevus Das. Right? That basically this person is going to be representing himself as if he's the Baal Tzedakah, and really he isn't. He's using other people's money, so he's going to get gratitude that he doesn't really deserve. So,
I mean, isn't it telling on how rich the person is himself? Because, I mean, the one that there is that the person deceives himself. And if the one that's giving this tzedakah
right.
is very poor,
right.
there was no way he actually could have given him the money.
Correct. It is true that the Gemara does say that if the person draws his own conclusions that are wrong, so then that's his problem. But first of all, here, you're actively doing something to create that impression. So it would seem to be an issue of Gnevus Das. The Shevet HaKahasi says, so yeah, Gnevus Das is just Sheker and Sheker and Mutter of Nashon. So Rabbeinu Yonah would seem to disagree with this. He wouldn't necessarily see it the same way. And that goes again to the question of under what parameters is Sheker and Shalom weighed up against each other in the way that we've seen so far. Okay, any questions about anything that we've said today so far? Anybody have any issues, any questions? All right, so what's next on our agenda? Just to launch it, then we'll have to continue tomorrow. So what we need to do tomorrow, we'll have to decide what time to start tomorrow in case we need to add a little more time to make sure we cover everything. But we have to, you know, maybe today we'll be Moedib Mikzas, right? Acknowledge a little bit of that sugya. And then Halach is together with that. That's the bulk of what really needs Chazara. The last two sugyas were more recent, so there were Lo Sachmod and Tokfu Kohen. So it's a little bit of a lower priority because they're more recent and a little bit fresher, although the sense I get from people is that Tokfu Kohen, even though it was the most recent, is more complicated and should be a higher priority than Lo Sachmod. Does that sound correct? Okay, so that'll be our agenda. We'll say a few more minutes now, and then we'll break for tomorrow. But our agenda is essentially Modu Mikzas, Halach, Tokfu Kohen, Lo Sachmod, if time is permitting. We have Chemda to finish that sugi as well. So essentially, Modu Mikzas, so just to begin the sugi. So Gemara asked the question, and this is very much a parallel or companion sugi to Migo, which we had discussed earlier in the semester. And Migo telling us that there is Nemanos to somebody when he could have chosen a more appealing claim. So here the Gemara says, Gemara first of all starts off with a Havmina, that why did the Torah say that a Modes of a Mixas is Chayiv in a Shvur? So the assumption seems to be that the Torah should have said the other way, that the Havmin it was that a Modim Mitzvah should be Pater from a Shvua. So it's a Machlokas Rishonim why it is that we would have thought that way. Why should it be that a Modim Mitzvah should be Pater from a Shvua? So Rashi says that he could have been Kamei Shuva Veda. And we discussed that the Rishonim with the Ran, for example, and some others have a problem with this Rashi, because Rashi seems to be comparing this to a din in the Gemara in Gittin, that a Meshiv Aveda is potter from a Shvua. He doesn't have to defend himself against the accusation that there was more than what he found. And the problem is, the Gemara says that that's Mipnei Tikkun Olam. So Mipnei Tikkun Olam sounds like it's a din derabbanan. So to say that din derabbanan should apply here as the havmin of what the Torah should have done seems to be a mismatch, and that's a problem. So what happens to be, as the Ran discusses, you could say that Tikkun Olam is still true even on a Daraisa level. But even though it sounds like Tikkun Olam means we make a change in the law of Midrabanan, maybe it's true even on a level Daraisa. So maybe it's possible to make the jump. We said in general that we're a little bit more comfortable with the idea that Rashi is not speaking in such technical terms, but Rashi is using the phrase as a melitza, as we find elsewhere in the Gemara as well, that a Meshiv Aveda is somebody who's trying to do at least a little bit of the right thing, and therefore we don't try to discourage some people, such people, from coming forward by punishing them for doing a little bit of the right thing. So the same way, we don't want to discourage somebody from returning a wallet because somebody will say, where's the rest of it? So I remember reading a joke as a kid where somebody jumps into the river and jumps into the ocean and saves a boy from drowning, and he returns the boy to his mother, and the mother says, he had a hat. Right? So we don't want to discourage people from trying to do good things because people will say, take a shvua on the hat. So too, we don't want to discourage a motzi aveda. And you could say here as well that it's a different kind of situation, but if somebody's willing to admit to a part of his debt, so why should we make the lender, the creditor, lose out and not get that half because we'll discourage the guy from coming forward by imposing a shul on him? Better we shouldn't discourage people who are trying to do a little bit of the right thing. So I think that's a perfectly tenable reading of Rashi, but some of the Rishonim were worried about how to make the Tikkun Olam Meshuv Aveda concept work with this. In any event, Tosa says it differently. Tosa says that it sounds like it could have been amigo. Right? That it's a pretty good example of amigo. That a person, if he was kofar bakal, if he had said, I don't owe you anything, so we would have let him off scot-free. Or not really scot-free midrabanan, because it's a concept of Yeshua's Hesus, but on a level of Minotaur, we would have let him off scot-free. So since he could have had that more attractive taina, so then let's also let him off here and say, Migo, he could have been kofar akol, let him be pater when he's modim mitzvahs as well. So essentially, this Gemara does tell us at least one thing for sure, that the Migo does not get you out of a shvua in this case. And the Gemara answers the question because we're concerned about ha'aza. And the Gemara says that the issue is that maybe the person is just admitting to half because he really wants to deny the whole thing. But that takes too much of a chutzpah. Then Eino Adamei is Bifnei Bal Chovo. He's not willing to totally deny that somebody did him a favor. So he'll acknowledge the favor, he'll just minimize the amount of the favor. And that he's doing, says the Gemara, Ishtamute Kamishtamet, he's trying to push things off a little bit. He wants to stall for time until he has enough money. So essentially, what do you see from the Gemara? You can see at least one isolated sentence. That this Migo is a Migo de Ha'aza, that the alternative claim, which should have been superior, has a Ha'aza problem. It requires a great degree of chutzpah, and it doesn't get you out of the shur. So this Gemara is consistent with a whole range of views and Rishonim that we find elsewhere. For example, that the Rambam and the Rimigash, that Migo never patters you from a shvua, so this Gemara works for that. The view of the Rishonim that Migo de Ha'aza doesn't work for anything, so this Gemara works for that. But it could also not necessarily be saying either of those two things. We could keep it to a minimum, and we just know that amigo da'aza doesn't get you out of a shvuah. And in the context of amigo, so we discussed how when it comes to amigo da'aza, the problem is credibility. And therefore, shvuah is about credibility, so amigo da'aza is not going to be enough. While amigo mimamon lamamon, which had a different kind of problem, maybe that would work to get you out of a shvuah, as we saw a number of the Rishonim who didn't like amigo mimamon lamamon for monetary purposes, did say that it was adequate to get you out of a shvuah. So different deficiencies in migos have different implications in different areas of halacha. So migo ta'aza has a credibility problem, so shvuah is about credibility, so at least that much we know from our Gemara, but it's also consistent with various other views in Rishonim that go in different directions to other extremes. So that essentially gives us basically two views as to why it is the Havmina we should have patered the Modes Mixas, either because the Mesh of Eda, or Tosfos because of the Migo, and then the Gemara's answer is Migo Da'aza. So then we're left still with two other dinim to explain. So why is it that a Kofar Bakal is indeed Pater, and why is it the Modes Mixas is Chayiv? So Kofar Akal, Pater, we saw two reasons. We saw Rashi's opinion in Bava Kamma that it is because of the Ha'aza, which is a very interesting expansion of that idea, that until now we've only seen Ha'aza as a limitation on your credibility, that we're not going to grant you the alternative claim because it requires Ha'aza. Here we're saying, according to Rashi, that Ha'aza is a reason to believe you, that if it would take a tremendous amount of chutzpah to say what you're saying, so we assume that you're not such a mechutzif, and instead you are telling the truth. We also consider the possibility that maybe it's just only enough in that manis that a shvuah isn't worthwhile because it's not going to add anything. But that was a possibility. We also noted that some of the Rishonim point out that Reb Chiya's statement, Reb Chiya Kamaisa, the first Reb Chiya over here, that Edim should work in the same way as a modim mikzas, that if two Edim come and say you're chayiv half, so then you still have the Chi of Shvua on the other half. So you could see that as a purely mathematical point. Well, Eidim are more powerful than Hodas Piv, or as powerful as Hodas Piv. So if Hodas Piv makes him Chayiv and a Shvua on the other half, so Eidim do as well. Simply a mathematical point, plug in the algebra and get that conclusion. But you could say, as the Ran and others point out, that it's not just about that, but that there's a svari here, that once you have the Edim come and say that he does owe something, the guy was Kofar HaKol, and now the Edim say that he does owe something, so you see, this is a guy who is Meis Panav Pnei Baal Chovo, that he is willing to deny a debt even completely to somebody who owed him. So now he no longer benefits from this Migo, so he's Chayiv and Shvua, as opposed to the benefit of the Kofar HaKol, who would have been Pater. So on the one hand, you have Rashi, who says that it's based on this Ha'aza giving him that manis, or you have Tosfos, who says essentially, Exer Sakas, the Pasuk and Parshas Mishpatim, that someone is Chayiv and Shvuah, when he says, Ki Huzad, this I'm Chayiv and that other things, so that we have a Svar, we have a Pasuk rather, that a Modim Mikzas is Chayiv and Shvuah, and we don't have a Pasuk that a Kofar HaKol is Pater and Shvuah. And we mentioned that that gives us room for an interesting Chakira. So what is the status of a Kofar HaKol? A Kofar HaKol is Pater from Shvuah, so is that because the Torah believes him? Do we say that he has Namanis? Or no, he doesn't have Namanis, he just doesn't have the Chayiv Shvuah, because the Gzeres HaKasa gives the Chayiv Shvuah to a Modim Mikzas. So we mentioned, for example, what about another context? That Beis Shmuel, Mishnah Melech, talks about somebody who was accused by a woman in a paternity suit. The woman claims that she has a child and he is the father of the child. So the din is that if he denies it, so he's pater from any obligation of support. And even if he admits to having a relationship with her, he's still pater because it could be that other men had a relationship with her as well. So there the Mishnah Melech discusses the view in the Rivash that we also wouldn't make him even take a shvuah midrabanan, because since the Torah believes him, so then we're not going to make him take a shvuah even a level drabanan. So the Mishnah Melech asks, but we make the Kofar HaKol take a shvuah hesis, so how come we don't say there that the Torah believes him, so therefore let's leave him off the hook from a shvuah even a level midrabanan? So we noted that this could be totally on this question we mentioned there. Nasta Gishadna had a tshuva about this, with one side of the Chakira, that the question could be an open question. Is there Ne'amanis here? In which case, all right, so maybe we don't want to impose even a Shvuah Drabanan. Or should we say, no, there's no Ne'amanis. It's that there's no chiyuv shvuah because the Gezeiras HaKasav only talks about the modim mikzas, but not more than that. And then the flip side of this will be, so why is there a chiyuv modim mikzas? Either because of the Gezeiras HaKasav of the pasuk, or because the ha'aza is no longer there because ishtamute kamishtamate offsets that ha'aza. That now that's a way of deflating the ha'aza a little bit, so he no longer has the credibility, because Chazal are apparently telling us somebody would, in front of Balchovo, acknowledge the chov while changing the amount in order to buy more time. I just said a lot of that very quickly. So is there any questions about anything that we've said so far? Any issues? And if you have any issues you want to discuss privately, feel free to bring them as well. Okay, so maybe we'll just throw in also Machlokas, Tosus, and the Ritva and Ksubas and Dafir Ches about, so therefore, the Nemanis of the other claimant, when a person is Modim Mixas, the idea that he has the ability to throw a Shvua on the Modim Mixas, so what is that based on? So Tosfos sounds like it's a Gilgul Shvuah, that essentially it's just we have him on the table, so now we'll add more once he's already playing the game. While the Ritva says a little bit differently, that there's essentially Reglayim Ladavar, that once he's saying something a little bit true, so now there's what to work with. It's not as if he's coming out of nowhere. We mentioned there's a Tosfos Sonara Perek, which says that it sounds like he's a liar once he's Modim Mixas, which the Ritva is not necessarily going that far, that it sounds like he's lying, but it's just that there is credibility, that there's an issue here, so we have something to work with to add on to the Shul. All right, so we will stop here. We'll continue, God willing, tomorrow. Hopefully we should get everything done in a normal session. Wish everybody a meaningful fast. It should be a day of effective tshuva and kapara and tefillah. Yeah, because we have a minyan, but we don't have a Sefer Torah.
Sefer Torah,
right. Do you want to
third floor.
Go there and lay. You can also go to the main basement. You'll have a main
basement.
I'll just end when I told you that 12 today. I was,
I'm sorry. Did that? I apologize. Oh, I.